Hello, I'm Rosari Griffin, and this is an interview with Dr. Rosari Kingston, who's a lecturer in the Department of Folklore and Ethnology at UCC. And tonight we're going to talk about Irish healing traditions and Rosari's work as a medical herbalist. Hello, Rosari, you're very welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's nice to hear another Rosari.
Indeed. Our namesakes. Quite unusual, actually.
I know.
Now, you're a lecturer in the Department of Folklore and Ethnology at UCC. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself initially and then how you became interested in this area, Rosari?
Well, I initially became interested in the area because I was stuffing a chicken one day with thyme.
Okay.
And it suddenly dawned me, why did women do this when it is so painstakingly awful to do? These little woody stems with tiny leaves, so why did they do it? And it started me thinking, they had less facilities than we had, so why did they do it? And of course I discovered it's very effective against E. coli.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yes, and this is why the chicken, why you have thyme in chicken.
Mm-hmm.
And so that started me on the whole road, and I discovered that there were lots of other herbs like that, so I ended up training to be a medical herbalist. And to give an explanation of what that means, it means that our basic training is in biomedical sciences, and then we add the art of healing with herbs onto that. We add the tradition.
Very interesting.
Yeah, and then it is very useful because it does mean you can work very easily with healthcare professionals because you understand the terminology, whereas, say, somebody like a Chinese herbalist would have a totally different basis. And it's back basically to a kind of a world view towards something.
Yes.
So then I went on to do my master's and finally my PhD. And my PhD was in the area of Irish healing, which I find absolutely amazing because it shares the same characteristics as indigenous medicine in other countries, say like the Native Americans.
Yes.
And so I teach that then in... I teach a module on the Irish healing in UCC, and I find the department there is so supportive of new ideas. And it is interesting because folklore and ethnology, especially when we look at the situation in America today and cultural relations and the whole effect of one's traditions, folklore is actually a very good degree to do.
Yes.
Because it gives you that insight into the patterns and the lifestyle of people. It's an old-fashioned word, I think, really, for anthropology.
Mm-hmm. This is like taking a holistic approach to things, either medicine or even, as you mentioned there, cooking even.
Yes. It's realizing that traditional cooking was actually very, very good. Like even the rich fruit cake in the winter meant you had all your dried fruit. If you take your Christmas cake, there's hardly any flour in it.
Yes.
But you have buckets and buckets of fruit.
Hmm.
So it gives you that. And parsley is another one. Like parsley grows, well, here in Ireland, certainly grows all year round. So it means you get your vitamin C. So you know that thing from the 70s of mashed potatoes with parsley sprinkling on the top of it?
Yes.
It was actually very good because you got vitamin C.
Mm-hmm. Now, in terms of this module you teach, why do the students take it, and what do they find fascinating about it, particularly pertaining to Irish culture?
I suppose the first thing about that module is they all tell me at the end it wasn't what they expected.
Okay. Is that good or bad?
Well, they're all happy. They're all very happy.
Mm-hmm.
But the reason is because you actually have to start off with why we think the way we think.
Okay.
And we think the way we think because of the culture we live in.
Mm-hmm.
And we have been very, very influenced in the West by Descartes.
Yes.
And in particular because he more or less said, unless you can actually see something, it's not worth examining. And that is the basic premise behind modern biomedicine.
Mm.
If you can't see it, if you can't prove it in a lab, then it's not actually effective.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas they start with that and they're shocked because they realize... They ask the question all the time, what herb is good for this or what herb is good for that?
Mm.
So they discover that actually healing is much wider, Irish healing in particular. It doesn't separate the body and soul. it involves the calendar year very much. So the different rituals that take place at different times of the year.
Yes, yes. You, like, for instance, you can't eat fish at certain times, is it? Any month with an hour or no hour or something, you're not supposed to eat.
Yeah, for pork and that.
Yes.
And, but it's also the fact that you would, say, have nettles in May.
Mm-hmm.
When they're just coming up over the ground, they're very, very good for impoverished blood. They're very good for detoxing, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
And there are lots of other herbs that they use, but they also use the moon, and they used rituals. And if you look at a ritual, so if you went to somebody with a cure, we'll say, for heart fever, it would involve certain prescribed actions. But it's a place apart, it's a time apart. And by actually acknowledging that you need that time apart, you're actually de-stressing.
Mm.
And pilgrimages were another part of healing. Going on a pilgrimage, going on the Passion Day, was another part of healing, because, again, it is time out. It is a time, if you go on a pilgrimage, you're not Lord so-and-so. Every pilgrim is the same.
Yes.
So there was a time out from the stresses even of your social status, where you were just one with society, one with humanity.
So would you say that this is, you mentioned, going back a little bit, you mentioned Descartes is like, I suppose, the science and the introduction of science, so to speak. So it's like inductive reasoning versus deductive reasoning. So like you're saying, taking a more holistic approach to life, to medicine, to eating.
Yes, it would very much be a holistic approach. It is that you cannot cure anything with just a pill, but the pill won't last long if you don't actually change your lifestyle.
Mm-hmm.
You actually have to do it in the round. Obviously, in an acute situation, the pill is needed. I mean, if somebody has meningitis, that's it. But if you actually have, let's say bronchitis.
Mm-hmm.
You take bronchitis, for instance, which is a scourge in this country.
Very common, yes. And
very, very common, mm-hmm. and from our climate in particular.
Mm.
Then this is something you have to do. Rather than just taking medicine, you need to look and say, okay, what do I need to do? And a warm environment is number one.
Mm-hmm.
Not getting wet is another.
Mm-hmm.
They're simple lifestyle. Like traditionally, what was used here was for smoking. They smoked a particular herb for it.
Mm.
And I know I have one patient, and he says he is down to having a smoke maybe twice a week, and that has sorted his bronchitis, where he used to be hospitalised before.
Very good.
Yeah.
And why was that again?
It was basically because this particular herb, it's mullein, and it is well known in Irish healing,
mm-hmm.
for treatment of bronchitis and asthma, actually.
Right.
And people would have known this. One of the problems we probably had, actually, was the change that occurred, Rosari, in the 19th century,
yes.
after the famine, because people went to school, language was the mode of teaching, and they lost the grandmother factor because the grandparents spoke Irish.
Mm.
And so the grandmothers or grandfathers generally pass on tradition.
Yes.
And so there was that break.
Mm.
Now, we have been very fortunate in the National Folklore Collection because, and this again is amazing in the department, because the students have, you know, access to this. They're told how to research it, and they discover so much about Irish life and what was good about Irish life and what needs to be kept about Irish life.
Okay.
Or not kept so much as incorporated.
Incorporated, yeah.
Yeah.
Because I suppose a lot of this knowledge is obviously passed down through the generations, and would have, as you said earlier, it would have continued because there was some, it had some relevance or some effectiveness.
Yes, generally speaking, with any indigenous medicine, if it's not useful, it will be dropped.
Mm-hmm.
And useful there has a wider meaning than what we normally think of. It is also if it is socially acceptable.
Yes.
So if it is useful in the society. So like, where, take for instance, one cure for stopping bleeding is cobwebs. But to use cobwebs today, people would turn up their noses at it.
Mm-hmm.
Because it wouldn't be socially acceptable.
Mm-hmm.
Even though it is excellent for stopping bleeding.
So it has a clotting factor in the cobwebs, does it?
Yes, there is. It's pure vitamin K.
Okay, I didn't know that.
And interestingly, the skin of the cobweb has actually antibacterial properties.
Mm.
So that's why you never see a rotten fly in a cobweb.
Well, that's
true. Dried. They're dried, but they're never rotten. They're never putrid. But that's why. So a cobweb is a very handy thing to have. It's a great excuse not to dust.
Yes, I was just about to say there. It's like the fly is embalmed in some way.
That's right, exactly. Until the spider is ready to eat it. It's a storage system.
And I was watching a Doreena Allen clip the other day, and you mentioned nettles earlier, and she was saying nettle soup in May. One should have four lots of it because, I can't remember her reasoning now, it has all the various vitamins.
It has, yeah. It is actually chock full of vitamins, and it's particularly good in May because people are generally impoverished after the winter, especially if you went, maybe not so much today, but definitely traditionally, where food stocks had to be preserved.
Yes.
And they say you were coming out of Lent as well, so it would have been important that you built up for the rigors of the summer work, because remember the long day was spent working.
Yes. Now, I suppose we've had a lot of people on talking about COVID and traditional scientific approaches to COVID. Obviously, there's the social side, you know, awareness, social distancing and all of that. And then there's the medical side. But from, we'll say, a traditional medical herbalist point of view, how would you approach the whole concept of COVID-19 and viruses in general?
Well, viruses in general, there are a few herbs. In actual fact, in the West Cork People this month, I have an article on it, on Prunella vulgaris, which is a little weed that grows in the grass, and it is very good against cold sores, herpes simplex.
All right.
And but generally, as regards COVID is taking on a different pattern, I would say, with almost every person who gets it. And a lot would depend on whether you can catch it at the very beginning. The first thing about it's a cold. It's considered a cold pathogen. So something like ginger would actually help to keep it at bay. And this, again, is back to the holistic approach, is how do you actually... So you're talking about it's like... The very fact
preventative.
That you prevented it, but it's also you need anti-inflammatories, because that is the drug that they have come up with that is actually helping. And that is an anti-inflammatory. So anti-inflammatories at the start, and things like turmeric would actually be a help. So literally incorporate into the diet things like turmeric and ginger. Ginger tea. Fry off ginger when you're doing a stir fry. And as I said, turmeric would be the same. So anti-inflammatory would be the first thing. Then your antiviral herbs would include things like lemon balm. But as it goes into the more serious areas, what you're really afraid of is this thing called a cytokine storm, where the immune system turns on itself, basically.
Yes.
And this is where, like, generally speaking, for a flu, we would give elderflower or elderberry. But in this instance, we actually wouldn't give it, because it is so effective that if you were weakened, it would cause an immune response that you actually couldn't cope with. So, but again, turning, say, from UCC to my work with Dr. O'Reilly, this is where we can work. We work very well. I suppose in my main area of research and practice would be the endocrine system. And there we are looking...
Endocrine meaning the kidney?
No, endocrine as in the hormones.
Oh, the hormones, okay.
Yeah, so like infertility, alopecia, the menopause, that kind of area is where... I suppose to some extent biomedicine doesn't have as many tools as we would have.
Okay.
Because again, as a traditional herbalist, I would be able to look at the pattern of that illness, the pattern of what is actually happening in infertility, what is actually happening in the menopause, what is actually happening in alopecia. You know, it isn't that there is just one drug for alopecia.
Right.
There are so many different causes of people losing their hair. It's incredible. That is a very good area. And as I say, working with a GP means that patients feel very confident that they have access to, you know, in the clinic there, they have access to, obviously, GPs, they have access to counsellors, chiropractors, myself, So it's amazing.
And yeah, I'll just let the listeners know that you work as a medical herbalist in an integrative clinical practice with Dr. Fiona O'Reilly in Clonakilty.
Yes, I do.
Okay. And this is where you're talking about now, you integrate your work with hers.
With hers. And it is very useful in that area of, we say, hormone irregularity, is how I would put it. You know, things like heavy periods, and these are all areas that a lot of women suffer in silence.
Mm-hmm.
I would certainly say the infertility, especially at the early stages, before people even realize, oh, there's a problem here.
Mm-hmm.
And it can be, you know, it's very difficult, very, very difficult one. But I think maybe lockdown might have taught us a lot.
Yes, in approaching life in a more holistic way?
I think so. I think you must see that yourself, talking to people.
I do, and I feel it myself in my own life. I suppose I've been spending more time at home, less time commuting, more interactions with family. We've sat down to have dinner together, which we hadn't before because I was never home in time, etc., etc. So it's been, from my point of view, and I know a lot of people don't share this because everybody's experience of COVID-19 has been very different, especially if one has been bereaved.
Yes.
But so notwithstanding all of that, for me, it's been a positive, I have to say. Yes. Even though difficult, you know, with the whole virus going on around us, at the same time, we took the advice and we heeded the instructions and we got on with it.
Yes, I think, and I think most people in the country did. As you say, it is difficult for those who have suffered during it.
Mm-hmm.
But, and it's probably more difficult going forward as we're opening up the country.
Mm-hmm.
Because I was out in the Bamboo Park in Glengariff today, an amazing place, by the way, absolutely amazing. And the coffee shop isn't going to open there this summer.
Oh, that's a shame.
Yeah, but there's loads of places for picnics, which was, you know, which is fantastic.
Rosari, another thing that struck me during COVID-19, and it's a funny thing, I am not a gardener, even though I have a garden back in front. Thankfully, it's sort of self-sufficient. But a lot of people took refuge in their garden and loved it.
Yeah.
Reconnecting with nature. I thought it was very interesting.
Yes, I think it was that reconnection with nature. I think it was almost a
therapeutic
shock to the system in that they realized medicine hadn't the answer.
Mm-hmm.
And there was that almost visceral need to actually connect back with nature.
Mm.
And that's very, very evident in Irish people. Once we get the chance, once we get the opportunity, we love nature.
Mm-hmm.
We love walking. We love walking the pilgrim paths. It is a feature of the Irish.
Mm.
And I think the garden, suddenly people said, I actually want to, this is where I come from. I want to know more about it.
Mm-hmm.
A bit like me in the time originally. I wanted to know more about it.
The concept of time.
Not the concept of time, but when I stuffed the chicken with time.
Oh, time as in,
as in the herb.
Yes, yes, indeed.
The herb.
Yeah,
time as in the herb. So it's the same thing. I want to know more about it.
Mm.
And this is what COVID did. It gave us a sudden time to actually look around us.
And finally, I suppose, Rosari, unfortunately, our interview is coming to an end, but I could talk about this area forever because I find it extremely fascinating. But in relation to your students then, what do they feel at the end that they've got out of your module in the Department of Folklore and Ethnology? And also, you might define what ethnology is as well.
I think what they got out of it, was a realisation that our perception of medicine is formed by our culture.
Mm-hmm.
And that this is very important because you can transfer this knowledge to almost every area of your life. So you can go into, you can run a business and you can say, is my perception of how to run a business informed by my culture or informed by something else entirely?
Mm-hmm.
You know, how is a business run in another country?
Mm-hmm.
A trading thing, whereas here, I think that is one student said that to me this year. She said I can transfer this knowledge. She said, to politics. She actually was a student, and she said, I can transfer this to politics. why am I thinking like this? What is influencing me? It forces people to examine. There is a professor of psychiatry in Harvard University called Kleinman, and he was probably the first person to realize the significance of culture.
Mm-hmm.
And he will insist that students doing psychiatry in Harvard actually do medical anthropology first.
Mm-hmm.
Because of the influence of culture on people's perception of illness, especially psychiatric illness, where we'll say if you come from an indigenous community, you might think the illness is that the spirit, your spirit has been taken from you.
Right.
And if you went into a psychiatrist and said, I think my spirit has been taken from you, I can imagine the answer he'd give you.
Yes. Well, on that note, I'm not sure if it's a positive note, but on that note, we might have to leave it there. But I think there's plenty of material there for another interview, Rosari. So if you don't mind, I will be in contact with you again in the future.
That'd
and to further discuss perhaps the concept and the Celtic vis-a-vis Roman concept of time, maybe T-I-M-E, and so on and so forth.
Yes, yes, because the Irish have a different concept of time to the linear concept of time that we kind of know officially.
Mm-hmm. And I think all of that is very interconnected with our discussion today, but I think that's a topic for another day.
Okay.
So I'd like to thank you so much, and most sincerely, for your time this evening, Rosari. It's been a real pleasure, and I look forward to talking to you again in the near future.
Okay. Thank you very much, Rosari. Bye.
Thank you.
Bye.
And there you are listening to Dr. Rosari Kingston, lecturer in the Department of Folklore and Ethnology at UCC. And she was speaking about Irish healing tradition along with her work as a medical herbalist in an integrative clinical practice with Dr. Fiona O'Reilly in Clonakilty. And this interview can be listened to on www.cry104fm.com. Go to podcasts and click on Dr. Rosari Griffin, presenter, podcasts.